then he gives up his spirit for fighting. And then, being bewildered, he turns to Krishna. Krishna starts to then describe to him the science of the soul. He takes up this process of distinguishing between the body and the soul, and pointing out that actually no one's going to die on this battlefield because the soul is eternal. So your idea that you should not kill Drona or kill Kripa or Bhishma, they're not going to die anyway. They're old, and by being killed on the battlefield, they will attain a very nice youthful form in the heavenly planets, so you don't have to worry for this. Then after describing the soul, then he carries on his analytical study to then study what Arjuna has just discussed, or religious principles. Because he has discussed religion, but without knowledge of the soul. This has been the weakness. And so then his attitude will not be, or his understanding will not be correct. So now Arjuna points out, even from his platform, just material, mundane religiosity, is now you're going to say, I'm going to not fight because of so many righteous purposes. But no one else is going to think that amongst the Kshatriyas, because it's not the Kshatriya duty to be inactive. Okay, if you're a Brahmin and you come onto the battlefield and say, my dear Kshatriyas of the world, why you are fighting? You're going to destroy everything. There's going to be nothing left and there'll be irreligion in the world. So then that's one thing. Then they will think, oh yes, maybe Brahmin has something to say. But if Arjuna suddenly comes out there and then speaking against his religious principles, he is saying, oh my dear brothers, why we should fight? You know, we should just be very nice and, you know, love each other and all this and that. Then they will say, well, actually, he's saying this because he's afraid. He came out here very strongly. He was speaking, saying so many things. And now that we have 11 Aukshahini of persons here, and he sees what is our might. It's not just Duryodhana and his 100 brothers, but it is more than half of the world is supporting him. The greater half. So then, now he is changing his tune. The great Arjuna will now say, well, maybe we should consider something else here, be a little kind to everybody. So they will not see it. So there will no religion will be established here. Not only that, if you do this, then for the Kshatriya to die in the forest, not in battle, and not following his principles, you're a Grihastha, you're not a Vanaprastha. You're a Grihastha, okay, you go to the forest. But Vanaprastha, I mean a Grihastha, how you go to the forest? What you'll do? So therefore, this is irreligion. So he's pointed out that, now analytically, by the Shankya philosophy, that in your calculation, you have left out this point of the soul. You have not considered this in your discussion on religion. So your discussion is imperfect. Not only that, your religion that you're discussing is not complete, because you're talking irreligion. You're talking the improper activity. So he says, now that we've discussed this, now let us discuss the actual position, or buddhi yoga, how to perform devotional activities. So now, these duties must be performed. But a problem comes, is most people are thinking that these duties, does that have something to do with us, this clicking or something? Or? These duties then are being done, but most people are doing the duties because of their desire for fruitive activities and fruitive results. They want this, so they've read the Veda, and they want some material good results, just as Arjuna has discussed, that we will be very nice and happy here after we've won this battle, and we will enjoy. Then when he sees he's not going to enjoy, then why do this battle? So Krishna is pointing out that these ideas of approaching the Vedic literature for sense gratification, this is not actual knowledge. This is foolishness. So after distinguishing this point, then we see that in the previous verse, then Krishna makes a very essential point that what water you will find in a well, you're going to find in a reservoir of water. So someone who knows the actual purpose of the Vedas, which is to become God conscious, they know the Veda. They know everything. So this is actually the essence, is that you must understand that your duties are to become God conscious. That is the actual thing. So in your discussion on religious principles, you did not bring up one point about God consciousness. And how you'll bring it up about God consciousness, you didn't even discuss the soul. Because God consciousness means the soul and God. So neither did you discuss God, neither did you discuss the soul. And what did you discuss? You were discussing the flowery words of these Vedas. You know, what benefits you're going to get. Nice religious things, you're going to take care of the women, then you're going to be very happy in their association and pleased in this association. You have not discussed anything about God. And you're a very nice person. You are doing welfare work for all the people. Suridam sarva bhutanam. You're the great friend of everyone. So it's nice. You've discussed the religion. But actually, what is the qualification to discuss religion when you don't know what is the purpose of religion? So here he's pointed out that one who knows this purpose, then he can actually get benefit from religious activities. No one else. The religionist will not get the real benefits of religion, because religion is to bring you to the platform of God consciousness. And Arjuna has decided, instead of following religion, he'll take up irreligion. So then what benefit he will get? Even worse, he'll just go to hell. So neither of his presentations have been well thought out. They're not well informed. So in this verse, then, Krishna has made the point that there are three considerations here. You have your prescribed duties, or duties that must be done. Then you have inaction, which means not doing your duties, which is what Arjuna is now proclaiming. And then there's capricious work, or work that's not according to authority, which is what Arjuna was proclaiming before. Is that we will do these duties, and we are the doer. We set up all these nice things. We are protecting the women. We are doing all these things. And so therefore, the results we will also be caught up in. Right? The men are killed. The women aren't protected. So therefore, the whole planet's going to go to hell, and it's our fault. We're going to kill our elders. We're supposed to respect them. We're going to go to hell. So, but Krishna is saying here is, you have a right to perform your duty. That you must do. But you can't claim that you are either the recipient of the cause of the results or the enjoyer of those results. This is improper. This is against scriptures. This is not according to authority. So this is not allowed. And you should never be attached to not doing your duty. So here we see is Arjuna missed the point. Is he was discussing Dharma, but he was thinking that he is the one who is doing the Dharma. And therefore, then the results are up to him. He can choose. Since I'm doing it, I am fighting, therefore I can choose to fight or not. But it's not Krishna says this is not the position. That is inaction. You are giving up your duties. This is inaction. So, therefore, one has to perform duties. And then Prabhupada points out here that as far as prescribed duties go, then they fit into these three categories. That there's routine work, which is your standard activities that you should perform according to your given nature. Then there's emergency work. There's work that must be done according to the time, place, and circumstance. So it may be for some temporary time, one has to do activities that aren't according to one's position. And then he says there is work done because of desire. That you will do some activity that either isn't normally done because you have a desire for getting something, like let's say an Ashwamedha yajna. That is because of desire. You want to go to the heavenly planets, you perform this yajna. You don't have to do this in your daily performance of duties, but you're doing it. So like emergency work, you're doing something other than what you're supposed to do. Or you are thinking that the work that you are doing is your work. You want the results. So this, Krishna is saying, should not be done. So one should fight as a matter of duty. If one fights as a matter of duty, then one sees one gets a proper result. So this is the essential point that Krishna is pointing out here and throughout the whole Gita. This is the summary of the Gita. So this is a very, very essential point here. Move forward a bit. You need a cushion here. So this is an essential point, is that people are approaching religion because it's going to give a result. And because of that result, only they are working. They are religious because they'll get the results. If they think, yes, if I do this, I'll get some pious results, some prosperity, then one is very enthusiastic to perform the activity. And if one's not going to get prosperity, then we see, then religion is questioned. Why I should do this? Like, I prayed to God, you know, why is it my son didn't come out alive, or why I didn't make my money, or why this happened, or why that happened? Because the idea is religion is supposed to give prosperity. But here Krishna is pointing out, actually religion is not for that. Religion is a medium for expressing your devotion to the Lord. So it's supposed to be that the religion has two purposes. One is by performing this religious activity without attachment, then one will become, Prabhupada says here, doubtlessly, everyone has his proprietary right in regard to prescribed duties, but should act without attachment to the result. Such disinterested obligatory duties doubtlessly lead one to the path of liberation. So by following religious principles without attachment, it will free us from this material world. So that is the direct result of religious principles. This is actually what religion is for. It's not for enjoying prosperity. People are cheating when they perform religious activities to get a material result. The actual purpose is to the activity, the ritual itself, if it's done without attachment, will free one from this material world. It will bring one liberation. What the great yogis and mystics and the impersonalists are desiring, you will get by performing your duties without attachment. Right? The impersonalists don't know this. So they give up duties and think they'll get liberated. And we see it's very rare that anyone ever attains such a position. So, and generally the only examples we have of people who are on that liberated person, they were born that way. We don't hear of anybody attaining impersonal liberation in their lifetime. We don't hear of examples, someone performing some sadhana and getting. I can't think of any, maybe someone else can, but Kumaras are born liberated. Sukadeva Goswami is in the womb liberated. So they've already done this work before. They've already performed their religious activities without attachment. That brought them to liberation. But the path of jnan doesn't bring anyone to liberation. It's nice, it keeps them busy, but we don't hear of them getting to that position. So then, that's one aspect, and that is the actual direct result of the ritual. But the actual purpose is that it is a means through which to show our devotion to the Lord. So we must do these activities for the Lord's pleasure. When they're done for the Lord's pleasure, that gives us actually the result. Because getting liberated from the material world is not enough. it doesn't actually satisfy the soul. Because the soul needs to be serving God. Up to this point, Krishna hasn't mentioned that. That is coming. But the main point is that you are worried about the reactions of this fight. But the reactions you say aren't going to happen. Means no one's going to go to hell for fighting. They're going to go to hell for not fighting. And all these people you are worried about, they will be freed from their present condition. They will be elevated to another position. If they're interested in religious activities, they'll go to the heavenly planets. If they're interested in spiritual activities, they'll be elevated to the spiritual platform. So he doesn't have to worry about that at this point. Any questions on this? Yes. Please. I'll repeat it. So he was saying that about attaining impersonal liberation, that Prabhupada mentioned that Aurobindo, when he was in jail, he was so distressed that he actually saw the super soul and attained to that transcendental position. But we see as he could not stay in that position. So it's not giving any lasting result. Basically, the point is that since the material world is meant to get out of here and go back to Godhead, and the way to do it is by following religious principles in devotion. But most people in the material world aren't interested in going back to Godhead. So the minimum is at least they follow the religious principles. So then they fall into three main categories: the karmis, the gyanis, and the yogis. So they'll follow the culture of the Vedic civilization, which is meant to be engaged in the Lord's service. And they will follow different aspects of the philosophy. So their aspect is not wrong, but it's not complete. So it keeps them busy. And then for those who are aspiring, then it doesn't create a bad atmosphere. Like we can see, like earlier when the devotees first came to India, then the people were more following the traditional culture. And so then we could go out, do kirtans, thousands of people would come. You have a pandal, 10,000, 20,000 people would come. They would read, they would chant, they would take it up. Nowadays, and they're giving that up, then there's less interest. There's not so you go out and then you don't get as good a response because of the just natural. They're not following as pious a platform as before. Like we see in the West, you go out on Harinam, some people notice, they say hello or appreciate a few people, say this and that. But you won't get thousands of people coming out with garlands and giving and washing the devotees' feet and giving them so many things. So just by nature, if the opportunity is there to perform devotional activities, they will do it unknowingly, but they will be inclined towards it. While if they give up the culture, they won't. So it's actually better for the living entity, even though he may be basically wasting his time for millions and millions of lifetimes, better he's doing it in a pious way, according to Krishna's directions. Then, if he comes in contact with a devotee, either by when he does his karma, he does a big sacrifice, and the priest happens to be a devotee, so he'll explain to him about devotional service, just like we see with Maharaj Puchina Barhishat. He had karmakanda brahmins, and he had done unlimited sacrifices. And they never told him about God. He didn't know, they didn't know. Then Narad Muni came along and told him. So then because of his sacrifices, then means not because of it, because of the situation in which he's doing, it's a suitable situation for a saintly person to come. If he was having a disco or something, then saintly persons won't come. But he has a sacrifice, it's a nice opportunity for them to come. Then he may hear from the devotee, if he's fortunate. Or the jnani, we see like Prakashananda Saraswati. He's sitting with his 10,000 disciples and they discuss Vedanta, and they've been discussing Vedanta, and they will discuss Vedanta. But they get nowhere. But then they have the fortune of meeting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in that atmosphere of Vedanta, then he can explain to them the actual purpose of Vedanta. So like this, it's the slow path. So Krishna doesn't recommend it. But it's better than no path, better than going to hell. But the actual path is now being described here in the Gita. The quick path is just, you follow these duties, but now do it for Krishna as devotional service. Then it becomes buddhi yoga. Otherwise, then it's not actually very intelligent. One is performing activities that will give a temporary result. Even impersonal liberation has to be temporary, because the soul must be active, and the soul must actually have positive happiness in relationship to God. And the Brahman doesn't actually offer any happiness. It means the happiness is that you're not suffering in the material world. So for those few moments that the soul is thinking, I am Brahman, I am liberated, he will be happy. So on the transcendental platform, the Brahman platform, that may be a long time. But actuality, how long that'll be? Maybe in his experience, it'll be some minutes, some hours, maybe some days. Then he'll forget about the happiness of being free from the pain of the material world. Then he'll become restless and want to become active again. So then he'll take up, again, material activities, because it's the only activity he knows. So it's for Aurobindo, it was temporary, short-lived, because then very shortly after, then he got in contact with that one divine Mataji, and then they became involved in divine activities, and in this way, then he lost that position. Is that okay? Anything else? Yes, Mataji. Oh, so question is if they do their prescribed duties very dutifully, but without Krishna consciousness, will they get liberated? Means they have to do it detached. Means here it says, disinterested obligatory duties, they'll bring liberation. But we see is factually it's a theory that is given to inspire, the impersonalists. Because actually only a devotee can be disinterested in material result. Because the Brahman liberation is also a material consideration. It sounds funny, but it's if we think about it, Prabhupada mentions, I think, in the second canto, that the seeing the super soul, emerging into the super soul, and impersonal liberation, these are two material considerations that are conceived in the material world. In the spiritual world, no one thinks like that. They don't think about Brahman realization, and they don't think about seeing the super soul, because they're seeing God in front of them, so they have no business with either of these. So the concepts are concepts of the material world. Though they are transcendental concepts, but they're actually not real. It means you can get them, but it's temporary. So factually, then, they're not, by definition, they're material. Anything temporary is material. So they can only get it if they're detached. If they're just very pious people doing their duties with attachment, they'll be purified, they'll be elevated, but they'll just get to the heavenly planets. They won't get beyond. They will not get liberated. Liberated means you're doing it without attachment. See, the problem is that the jnani is unattached, so he does no work. He doesn't want the results, so he doesn't do the work. The karmi wants the results, so he's doing the work. So both of them don't get anywhere. So buddhi yoga means to perform the prescribed duty without attachment. So you have the mentality of the jnani, but the activity of the karmi. That will give you liberation. But we don't want liberation. We want devotion. So therefore, we do that process for Krishna. Right? That gives us... So performing our duties without attachment for pleasing Krishna, then that gives devotion. Otherwise here, because at this point Krishna is just slowly introducing the points. And so up to this point he's hinting at devotion, but he hasn't specifically said it. So up to this point he's introducing Buddha Yoga. So Buddha Yoga means you're doing your duties, but you're not doing them for the result. You know, one is he's a grihastha, he's a kshatriya, so he has to do those duties, but not for the purpose that is gained there, not for the happiness of household life or the happiness of being the emperor of the world, you know, or showing his prowess. No, it's his duty as a king to fight. It's his duty as a householder to protect. These things must be done because that's your duty. Because your conditioned nature, your body and subtle body, we've acquired that by the modes of nature. So now what are we supposed to do with it? Therefore, according to the body and subtle body, we engage it in Krishna's service. There's suitable activities that we can do, but we must do them for Krishna. That's the ultimate point. Because even dharma, we are not interested in. Right? We see that the end of the Gita then makes that point, that we're giving up all religions and surrendering to Krishna. So what we're interested in is devotion to Krishna. But Krishna, to perform that devotion in the material world, wants us to do our duties for Krishna. Right? But we're not interested in the duty. We're interested in Krishna. And in the Bhagavatam, it begins that kicking out all cheating religions means anything that has to do with developing materialism. So religious duties performed for material purpose are kicked out. Only religious duties performed to please Krishna are accepted. So we see in the Bhagavatam then so many examples of devotees performing their religious duties in connection with God. And all levels, from, you know, beginning stages, you know, neophyte like that, like Gajendra, he's just asking to be freed from his material calamity, like that. Or Aditi is worried that her sons are not in their position. They're being exploited by the asuras. So, but in all cases, they turn to God. Then we see, or Dhruva Maharaj, he's been insulted, and so he wants wealth. Right? So Artha, Artarti, all these people are turning to God. They're practicing their religious duties to please the Lord. So then they're becoming freed from the material attachments and they're getting the Lord. And then the best results, best devotees, then we see, then with Prahlad Maharaj, that he surrendered, he's not asking for anything. And then this takes us up to then the residence of Vrindavan in the 10th canto, where they're doing their activity, but only to please Krishna. That's the only purpose. There's no other. So their purpose becomes so deep in their love for Krishna that even the religious duties sometimes become disturbed. Dwarka, no. Dwarka, Mathura, you see the religious duties are part of their service. They perform them very perfectly. But the love is so great in Vrindavan that even those duties are not the prominent factor. No one notices much. They're just an excuse to do something for Krishna. Does that make some sense? Okay. So, yes?
In Prabhupada's lecture on this verse, pointed out that the key word is hetu.
Hetu.
And if you're not the cause, then the effect cannot touch you.
Ah, okay.
And told a nice story connection about when he was selling his books in India, and he went to one bookseller who was selling his books, told Prabhupada that because the government tax was so great that he was going to not work so hard and not make so much profit so that he wouldn't have to pay a very high tax. So Prabhupada used this as an example of we want to work for fruit.
Mm.
If we aren't there, then we're not going to work.
Mm.
But then Prabhupada used the same example of tax of the state that by having, of course, Krishna as the center that the work is done for Krishna, that the fruits are given to Krishna, just like you give taxes to the state, and then the state distributes those taxes to all the various facilities for running the state. So Prabhupada used the same example. You have to have the central point. Then everything gets distributed and it works out.
Very nice point. What was it? Hetu. Cause.
Yeah.
Cause, yeah.
If you're not the cause, then the effect cannot touch you.
Yeah, he says that, one has to do it. Obligatory work is action in the mode of goodness. Work with results become the cause of bondage. Therefore, such work is not auspicious. Yeah, it's essential. It's a very fine point. Is that we have a tendency to think that the work that I'm doing now is giving me my result, but actually that result is coming from previous activities. It means whatever we do is coming from before. So our work is to be done because it's supposed to be done. The work will give result in the future, and then, as Brahmananda Prabhu has pointed out, that you can either have it for yourself and then get bound up, or if by offering it to Krishna, then it comes back in these form of benefits or devotional advancement. So this is the thing, is that we perform the activity, and then there's two results we can get. If we are the cause, then the result's ours, so then we get bound up and we have to stay in the material world to enjoy those fruits. Or we're not the cause. By the arrangement of the modes of nature, we have a conditioned nature. That conditioned nature is acting under the control of the material nature, and it's being done for Krishna. So he's the controller, so he's the cause, the result is his. Then we will get spiritual benefit. So it's a very...
This raises another point. In the beginning, Prabhupada wanted all of his followers to try 16 more hours. But at the same time, he gave all of his devotees so much work to do. Printing work and doing other things. And so they came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, can't do both. You can't do all this work again. You have to chant 64 runs. And then Prabhupada reduced the amount of runs by half to 32. And even then, the devotees found it very, very difficult. So what are we to understand from that? That the devotional activities of hard work are in the same level as chanting Hare Krishna? Or what's more important?
See, the chanting, the importance between the work and the chanting, you have a few points. One is that the work is going to benefit others, like that. So then the chanting will benefit us, and the work will benefit others, just in general. If we're going out in Harinam, of course that will benefit others. But especially books and distributing prasadam, then this will give great benefit to the others. So the preaching then has great effect and great benefit for both us and the others. Another aspect is that according to the acquired nature, one is very, by nature Westerners are very active. Just to sit down and chant would probably be difficult. It's even nowadays, you see, you go into the temple, very few can sit and chant. You know, there's enough time between Mangal Arati, Darshan, generally to chant 16 rounds. Very few do it. They have to do something else. So let alone chant 64. So better to be engaging that activeness in the positive preaching rather than just restlessness. Otherwise, then, they may get some rounds done, but that's all. But here, they can get so much work done that will benefit themselves and others, and then get a minimum rounds done.
So what's more important, work done in Krishna consciousness or chanting Hare Krishna? Or just as equally important?
Like that. Both are important. Both are important. So it also depends upon who's there. Because Prabhupada says 16 rounds is minimum. So naturally in the beginning, 16 will be, you know, an effort to do or will be just comfortably done. And then the work will encompass the mind. But Prabhupada mentions that also with time we see that one starts to become deepen his interest in the philosophy, the study of the books, and then preaching that to others and distributing that to others. So then at that stage, we may see the chanting may increase. If not, then kirtan is increasing in the way of hearing and chanting the Lord's glories. So then these aspects become, how you say? He calls this jnana yoga. This aspect of buddhi yoga that he's describing now is karma yoga. Then it generally will develop into jnana yoga, in which the study and distribution of the understanding of Krishna consciousness becomes more prominent. Like you see a preacher, then the work is also not so.
Chanting rounds takes only 2 hours.
Yeah, so then you have to be.
The other, only 2 hours. When the percentage, how does it 90%? If chanting is 90% important, then we should spend 90% time. Devotional service makes you pious?
No, it doesn't make pious, but
That's another thing. But one would have to see it, how you say? One should connect it. Because I know that there was a story that one devotee was, he'd get up in the morning, you know, just take his bath, go out, and collect money. Because there was some big festival. Come back at midnight, go to sleep. Get up in the morning. And then after many days, he collected much money, and then Prabhupada called him. And then he said, you know, he asked about if he was chanting his rounds. So he wasn't, because he had to get the chant, so the other work done. So Prabhupada said then that the other work, the other services doesn't have any meaning. So it's when the chanting is there and the service is there, then you get the good result.
Complementary.
Yeah, they're complementary. Yeah. That's the point. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
The devotional service and the chanting.
Yeah.
Worshipping the deity, reading the books, all these different things.
Yeah, they're all complementary.
Keeping accounts, washing the floor. These are all complementary parts of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the Bhaktivedanta Mainland, you know, Mahavishnu Swami, he was making the altar for the Radha Govindananda, you know, at the Mainland. And then Sam Chandra was our DBC. He just told them, you don't chant, you're not, just make the altar. Then later Prabhupada came to know that they were not chanting their Ram. They won't be making the altar. Prabhupada said, we have to chant your 16 Ram.
That's something we're the same. Arjuna didn't have time to chant 16 Ram.
Ah,
the Prabhupada said, we're not in the Bible group for a chanting.
I think also I'd like to say that I know the old days when we used to have enormous marathons, and everyone would work from night, morning till night. Nobody was doing good silent or so on. And that was usually the time when most people blew, actually. That was always the time that Christmas marathon, then people just got fried and they disappeared. So I think we really have to stress the chanting as a central activity around which everything revolves. The chanting goes and everything else goes along.
Is that without the chanting, then the proper advancement won't be there, because it's only by chanting that we get situated on a platform that we will do devotional activities. Without it, we will not be purified. We're not. Other ages, the people were very pious, so just by nature they would only do activities in the mode of goodness. But for us, without the chanting, there's no question that we will perform any activity that is of any benefit. It was a general statement. It was a general statement just saying that of the two is that we're going to hear our rounds, so we're the ones specifically benefiting. But the services that we do, especially those days, it would just, you go out on Harinam, distribute prasad, print books, distribute books. So those activities were specifically to expand, though we ourselves are benefiting by engaging in that. But the chanting was specifically to our benefit. It wouldn't have benefited, you know, the man out on the street. Japa.
And you're talking, I think, about congregational chanting.
Well, I believe Prabhupada is meaning just go there and chant.
Japa?
Yeah, I believe so.
Just chant Japa.
Because they were very difficult places to walk on, Poland. And also there's, I believe there's statements that Gorky Shore does poverty by his, of course, he's elevated Mahaprabhu, just by his chanting.
Means we can't. This is just general. Means we can't say that by our chanting only we are benefited. Because when we chant, then there's so many living entities that get benefit. It purifies the atmosphere, and that pure atmosphere, others are able to be more influenced by Krishna consciousness. All that is there, but compared to going out and doing Harinam Sankirtan or giving someone a book, the effect will be much stronger. So therefore, both. In our line, we do both. Is that we have to concentrate ourselves so that we are try to develop that relationship with the Holy Name ourselves. Because if we have that relationship, it's easier to inspire others in that relationship. At the same time, is then we try to benefit the others by getting them to understand and take up the process. Otherwise, if we just chant ourselves, even though they are indirectly benefited, it's not as great as if they come in contact. For others, that would be Agyata Sukriti. But we want to turn that Agyata Sukriti into positive devotional service. Like that.
Yeah, that's true. He was there, he was chanting Japa, he was sleeping, and because of that, see the Bhakti Yoga was planted. It's not that one visit that should have come up. Not by look at Russia enough.
Yeah.
He went to Malaysia in 1971. You know, he's the first person to go to Malaysia. You know, Prabhupada. Any other devotees there. So Prabhupada went and chanted them that the road is there.
Now, I want to make a comment that yesterday we had a class, and it was mentioned of, about Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, and he was his activities were being glorified and presented at a very high level of Krishna consciousness. Because he did two things. He chanted in the room alone or with another devotee with no lights. And he went into a room in Mayapur for 5 days and just chanted, didn't take any shower. So this is the second lecture of Maharaj. He gave the lecture. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, he also gave a lecture. It was all about Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. I spoke with him privately about it. But as I pointed out, first of all, we don't have any example of Prabhupada, who's on the highest level of Krishna consciousness, ever staying up all night long. To me, what is more inspiring is Prabhupada did. He took rest religiously at 10 p.m. Actually, he would retire at 9:30. He would have massage and take rest at 10 o'clock. And he would arise at 1 o'clock. And then he would write his books all night long. This is very inspiring. So, furthermore, I pointed out to Maharaj, since he's insisting on glorifying Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, there are references from Prabhupada negatively commenting on Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. And this is in the folio. There are three letters. The first letter, Prabhupada says that our Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj sings songs which are not approved by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And he names the song, by Jayadeva Goswami. I'm not making any comment on Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. I mean, I've done a lot worse. Unauthorized song. So I cannot comment. However, if Srila Prabhupada is saying that he's singing songs which are not approved by Prabhupada, if he's singing songs that are not approved by Prabhupada, immediately the red flag should go up. And he was cautioning this devotee who wrote to him about learning songs from Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. The second reference is a devotee asked Prabhupada about hearing the tapes of Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. And Prabhupada discouraged him from that. And the third reference is a devotee wants to learn how to play the mridanga and sing the bhajans from Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj. And Prabhupada says no, he discourages him from that. And Prabhupada, of course, did a very nice explanation of how we should not be concerned with the form of chanting, but rather the emotion, the bhakti, that's more important. And he said, we can very easily become, if we just want to learn drum beats and so on, then it becomes performance. Prabhupada, of course, didn't want that. He wants us to chant from our Krishna consciousness. And I told Maharaj that if you're going to present Krishna Bhakti Maharaj as an example of high level of Krishna consciousness, then every other thing should be also given that the Prabhupada has given us.
Mm.
So, that's why I have absolutely, I am in no position to give any kind of judgment on Krishna Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
I am simply pointing out what Srila Prabhupada
did.
Maharaj, didn't Mahaprabhu, one of the books he was doing, his reading was
he would sing those in the Gambira.
Yeah.
While we see that there, those would be done publicly. So that's the problem, is that Gita Govinda may be sung for the deities, or sung in that kind of situation, like that, as part of, like in Jagannath Puri, they sing for the deities, they sing Gita Govinda. But it's not used for Nam Kirtan, for the street or public performance. So that would happen. So that point is being made. It may be nice for him, but you have to consider the others, that they will not, it's not beneficial for them. Otherwise, then they all just start jumping into these things, reading these things, and they'll not understand these things. Like that. Someone has to be careful. You know? It's a bona fide literature, but at the same time, it's who it's bona fide for. It means all the literatures of the acharyas are bona fide, but it's just a matter of one's qualification, you know. That's all, and the situation in which they are applied. You know, it's just like the you know, Nectar of Devotion. It discusses so many things like that, but it's just a matter of how that will be used. You know, it's there, but we don't, like in a general class, necessarily get so much into so many technical points of rasa that will be discussed, let's say, in the second and third chapters, sections of the Nectar Devotion. Well, we'll generally, for preaching, stick to the first section and some references to the others that are as they're applicable. So it depends upon, the whole point is what you deal is what you bring out from others. Just like if a son, he acts in a certain way, he will bring a certain mood from the mother. If he acts, you know, in a dependent way, he brings from the mother the mood of protection or care, nourishment. So when you bring those forward in a public forum, what will you bring out of the people if there's nothing there to bring anything out? It means the mother has the capacity of rasa to reciprocate with the child as a mother. So if he acts like a child, he'll get that reciprocation. If he goes and does that to someone else, he won't get that. So the point is if you put that, there must be an audience that it will bring something from them. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya, he would sing those songs. And that would bring something from Srup Damodar Ramananda Rai. Or generally you would see he would sing one line and they would sing the rest of the song. Or he would be in a particular mood, and then they would sing that to bring that mood from him. So it's a matter of, it's not, we have to be very careful not to try to enjoy these things. That it's just, we like it, so then for we do it. Because it's what one could get from it. You know, just like a small child, you know, is just trying to walk, so they want to go on a vehicle, so maybe they can use a tricycle or a very small bicycle. You wouldn't give them a car. It would be dangerous for them, dangerous for others. So it's bona fide. It's not that the car is wrong, but it's just the situation. So these things aren't for public discussion, public use. Yeah, so because his nature, he would use. So for him, it was maybe fine. But for others, it may not be so good. So, you know, Prabhupada's not criticizing his use of it. He's criticizing our use of it.
You have to understand the circumstances.
Yeah. But point is that he's a great person. Prabhupada once in Mayapur mentioned he's on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So that means liberated. But why would he be an example for devotional activities when we have our acharyas who are on the platform of prema? Right? Does that make sense? It means liberation is in between material conditioning and prema. It's right in the middle. So, but without the example of prema, you won't get there. There's two aspects. Always remember Krishna, never forget. So he's never forgetting Krishna. Right? That aspect has been accomplished. Now he's practicing always remembering Krishna, perfecting that. So we're still trying to get out of this material world and remember Krishna how much we can. So his level of remembrance, ours will not be, he's on a different level to do it. So he may be acting as an advanced devotee, but our acharyas don't act as advanced devotees, they act as madhyamas, which is what we can benefit from. You know, if we sit down and we decide, okay, for 5 days I'm going to chant, no eating, no sleeping, no going to the toilet, nothing, we might have problem. But if we took Prabhupada's example, okay, take rest on time, try to sleep as little as possible, get into our sadhana, into our preaching, that we can take. You know, or the other examples of the Goswamis, because that's meant for us, because they were acting as madhyamas. So the activities of a uttama are not really useful to us. What's useful is uttamas who act as madhyamas. That's more useful to us. So therefore, we're careful on taking example. Is that?
Yes, the way it was presented yesterday, the story was that Vishwanatha Kumar was in the temple, he was going to chant all night long, and the pujari, who was going to be disturbing the pujari, wanted to take rest, he had to get up and do his, you know, seva. So it was like the way it was presented, like the pujari was on a lower level because he wanted to take rest.
Uh-huh.
And then,
yeah.
So the pujari asked, you know, don't have any lights on, close the doors.
Mm.
So my point is that pujari is also a Krishna conscious.
Mm.
You can't say that staying up all night to chant on a higher level than worshiping the deity.
Mm.
And both are Krishna conscious.
Yeah, both are Krishna. What you could say is that the position of just exclusively being on the platform of chanting, you could say, is purely the Bhagavat platform, but that's only for uttamas. Therefore, it doesn't apply to us. We want to be able to 20 kirtaniya sadahari, 24 hours be engaged in chanting and remembering. But our method of doing that will be to spend some time doing puja, some time sadhana, some time working, some time, you know, bathing, some time eating. That way, slowly, slowly, we'll purify ourselves. Yeah.
Well,
yeah. So we'll slowly, slowly get there. It's the same process, but since... means if you are liberated, then you can function by purely Bhagavat platform. Then staying up all night is a better platform because you don't have to sleep. You can just, like Haridas Thakur, he just chanted 3 lakhs like that. But if one is conditioned, then one has to take advantage of the Pancharatra system and the Varnashram system to keep us engaged. Then it keeps us busy and, you know, basically it keeps us off the streets, or it keeps us on the streets in a good way instead of in a bad way. So then what's good for, you know, what's good for one is not necessarily good for the other, like that. So one the, how you say? One has to see the level of the devotee, he should do that activity. Like in here, basically in the Gita, Arjuna is being presented as a madhyama. Therefore, he cannot go to the forest and just give up everything, because he's not going to go to the forest, give up his family, give up his kshatriya duties. He's just going to go there, like we see. They went to the forest so many times. And when they're in the forest, they're fighting like anything. Fighting with Gandharvas, they're fighting with the demigods, they're fighting with everybody. And they're there with their family and doing all their activities. So as a madhyama, better he sticks to his duties. So therefore, he should go on the battle, he should fight, he should, you know, manage his kingdom, he should perform his religious household duties. Then it's good for him. Then when he comes to a different platform, then their duties change. So for him, it may be the best situation to sit and chant. But for us, maybe we could do it one day, and most likely not, and then that's it. Then we won't do it again. We will be scared of it. You know, I remember one temple they were decided to, you know, it was Janmashtami. So, you know, anyone who wanted to chant, you know, more rounds, then they would come into the temple, they would chant for a while, they'd do kirtan. So the idea was to do 64 rounds. So this one devotee, after 54 rounds, just mentally just freaked out. They couldn't handle it anymore. They just left the temple and had to go back to their office and do some work. They just couldn't chant anymore. Oh, that Odalomi?
No, no.
Oh, no, a different person.
Another one. Parvati knows him. He was from Africa.
Uh-huh.
Well, he was from America. Anyway, well, African American.
Yes, that is the political correct.
Anyway, this is what he did. And the devotees were telling Prabhupada, and all he did was chant. All night. Prabhupada even wrote about this in the Bhagavatam.
Uh-huh.
He didn't name him.
Uh-huh.
He mentioned one of our devotees. And Prabhupada very rarely wrote about devotees in the reports.
Yeah.
That's one example of that. And Prabhupada totally rejected this. He says he cannot maintain. And of course, after some time,
I've never heard from him again. Yeah. But yeah. So, yeah, one should eat according to his health. Like a sick person with jaundice has to avoid ghee. And someone who's healthy, he can eat ghee. So accordingly, we should situate ourselves. So we should probably end here, 7:20. Jai Ho. Thank you very much. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai
Nitai Govara Premanandi.
No, we're not discounting the service.
You can't call it eternal.
The service is eternal. But the point is our consciousness hasn't come to the eternal platform. Means
our consciousness. But our service, I mean, my consciousness might not be working my bones
devotional
off, but when I put my money in the bank, it still gets interest. So that's what I want to know.
Yeah, it means is that you perform the service, then one is advancing.
Uh-huh.
But the point is we're trying to come to the platform of prema. So we haven't in our service, we haven't done it on that level. So it's service.
Well, it must be more than the Gyatra
Sutra. Well, it is. Of course it's more than the Gyatra Sutra. A Gyatra Sutra means unknown devotional service.
Yeah.
It's just like you go out on and do Ratha Yatra, and so many people come and see, and that's all. They don't know what's going on.
Not
that's
just
the
pious activity. No.
But see, there's different kinds of pious activity.
All right.
This pious activity of a Gyatra Sukriti will give a Gyatra Sukriti.
Okay.
Means pious activities done for karma will give karma. Pious activities done for jnana will give jnana.
Okay.
But a Gyatra Sukriti will give the opportunity for bhakti. So it's special. So even though we say it's pious activities, they have to be careful. It's not pious activities like giving in charity to a beggar. Because that will give you the opportunity to give in charity to a beggar again. It won't give you opportunity for devotional service, but a Gyatra Sukriti will put you in touch with devotional service.
Okay.
Like that. So at some point you keep coming in touch, at some point you take it up.
So.
Right? Then we take up the practice of devotional service. So there's a difference between the one and the other. If we're going to classify what we're doing as a Gyatra Sukriti, and it's not pure devotion, then the whole point is this is a discussion and a point for someone on an advanced level so that they can discriminate for their own personal benefit. This is not something that you preach like that. It means that you have to know your audience. It means there are technical points that you can discuss with, you know, it's just like a little girl. You tell her, just behave nicely, be a good girl and all this. Now when she gets big and she's married, and then the mother comes to her and then refines that point, like that, that's for her. You don't tell those points to the little girl. So the whole thing is if one is categorical, whenever there's a statement that anything less than prema is not devotional service, that is has a different purpose, and it's for a different kind of devotee. Its purpose is that we don't get stuck where we are and think that's good enough. We're always trying to be progressive. Because the tendency is that we do something, we get a nice result, we think that's good enough, but we have to keep going. So therefore, there's the wake-up call now and again to say, well, actually, we're sadhana bhaktas, we're aspiring to be a devotee, we're not a devotee. Like sometimes Prabhupada would do that with the devotees. Rare. But they would be talking about, these people are not so advanced and that, this and that. And then Prabhupada would say, you are also, you're just aspiring, you're not a devotee. You want to be a devotee. So the whole point is that aspect is to inspire us to go on. It should only be used like that. If it doesn't inspire, then it's the wrong use of it.
Yeah.
Like that. It's just a technical point, just so you know where you are. It's just like you're driving in here to Delhi, and when you get the Pall Wall, if you think you're in Delhi and you stop and think, okay, here we are, then you have to go, excuse me, but you got about another hour to go. Yeah. But if you're driving, you don't just go and you get the Pall on, and you guys are out of it. You know, what's going on? You're not in Delhi, you know. You just say, no, you guys are nonsense. You know, but the point is the car is driving to Delhi, so that has to be considered. You know? So it's just a matter of technical points to understand. Means for the devotee who is like, let's say, the last chapters of Gita,
okay,
where you're getting into discriminating the modes and picking the material nature apart, like that, and watching all the different things happen, all the things that you thought were all very nice, you start to see what's actually the modes working and all that. These discussions are for that devotee. They're not general discussions.
What about no diminution?
It means there is none.
Okay.
It means point is sees activities that are performed for the purpose of prema are considered as good as.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to discriminate that they're not.
Because you're not there.
No, because otherwise, if we say it is, then we ourselves, if we say it is, we're not going to get there.
Okay.
Right? But people who are on that platform of prema, they see it as good as, because you just follow it for some time, you'll get there.
Okay.